This is not the BBC.
Hey, got the morning show with Aaron in the studio. I've got Robs. Good morning.
Good morning.
How is your nature connection, Robs?
How is my nature connection?
Yes. Rate your connection.
I can't do that. It's too hard. You can't do that as a first question.
I think that's why I threw it in there. I have a tendency to do things.
Throw
like
me.
That, yeah. Because you're a familiar guest.
It's ongoing. It's ongoing.
It's a work in progress.
And it always will be.
Right, that's a good answer.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, Robs runs an organisation called Kura Taiao, Nature Connection. Do we still look up Kura Taiao on the website, or do we look up Nature Connection now?
I'm in the process of making everything really more proper. I'm trying to get some funding and get someone to make me a really nice website, because I struggle for time to do things on my own.
Yeah.
So in the near future, it's all going to be really nice looking and easily accessible. But right now, I'm still in that process.
Okay. Well,
but it's Raglan, so just come and say hi. You'll see me around.
Okay. What do you look like?
Big and hairy and bushy, and usually smell of fire.
Okay. All right, so today Rob's come in and said he wants to talk about naming things.
Mm.
So you're talking about people, animals, plants, landscape, or all of the above?
Yeah, a big part of Nature Connection's building relationship with the different elements of nature. And it's a conversation I've had many, many times over the years where people who work in the natural science field, I guess you could say, either educating or in science or conservation work. Naming things seems to be a big part of that culture. And especially around education, I'm always saying, I don't teach necessarily, I don't really teach the names of things. You know, they come up in reference, but it's definitely not an important thing. And I often encourage the kids to come up with their own names. But I find culturally we not just with names, but with answers, it stops us looking. So if we have an answer, then we stop looking any deeper into that subject. And I find that with names as well. If we know the name of a plant or a bird, we think, oh, cool, I know it. And then we just move on to the next one.
This is definitely a theme in our discussions. You don't like things that stop the looking, the observing or participating.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big part of where that connection comes from, is the ongoing curiosity and depth. We all experience human relationships, and if I just knew your name and that was good enough for me, it'd be quite shallow relationships that I'd be having in my life, because I wouldn't know the depths and the passions and the difficulties of people, which make me feel closer to them. And it's no different in nature from what I've experienced.
So, do you know the names of things, though?
Yeah, I do. Well, so I've gone through with a lot of things in my life, I guess, like the whole journey from the beginning, and explored broad fields of different ways of thinking and learning. Initially, I had a few years where I was really geeking out on, especially around wild food and wild medicine. And yep. This was in the days when I'd cycle around New Zealand on my bike every summer for a few months. So every different environment in New Zealand, I'd be going at a bicycle pace, and any time I'd see a plant I didn't know, I'd be off my bike and exploring it and trying to find out what it was, and doing what many of us do, and looking up at field guides and books and researching and filling my mind with information on that, which is it's been valuable for me, and it's been interesting. Sort of since then, when I've been exploring the sort of deeper levels of nature connection, it's become more clear to me that, in a way, that has been a hindrance to so many plants which I didn't get to know intimately, because I was content to just know a name.
Yeah.
and because I'm not on my bike all the time, I'm not necessarily getting those opportunities to go and meet those plants again and spend a bit more time with them. And being a mentor to a whole heap of people in nature connection, I've just found not using those names and just encouraging someone to go and see for themselves.
Is this based on a philosophy or anything that you learned elsewhere, or is this just...
Yeah, kind of, yeah. I mean, mentored by nature is kind of my slogan. Is that the right word? Slogan, in a way?
Slogan doesn't sound like
doesn't, right,
what you're
right.
doing, does it?
No.
We've got a slogan and a marketing plan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it does come from a philosophy, but it's not a human philosophy. It's the philosophy of you know, trees and nature.
So you must have got
don't have names for themselves. They just know. You know.
Yeah.
They just live in that. If we took all our names away from each other, you know, how we'd probably navigate life and definitely communicate would be quite different. But we'd have a whole different skill set, and you know, it's easy to just get someone's attention, but then to have the ability to hear with various voices around you. Which of those voices is aimed at you? You know, we'd be listening a lot more deeply.
Mm.
And we can totally do that.
So where did this... Do you remember a moment or a time where you realised that you didn't want to be naming that? Or whether the connection, the focus on connection came in?
Yeah.
And you started divesting
yourself
of the
things?
It's
more a feeling, I think. Yeah, you know, I did have names. I did know names of every tree in the bush. And hanging out with those trees, it just felt wrong one day. It just felt like, you know, I just questioned it. Where does this name come from?
Yeah.
You know, is it really honouring? Because the trees, you know, and all the elements of nature become your friends. You know, it's about relationship, and you get to know them more and more, and what they like and what they don't like, and where they like to live and how they like to live, and you know, their shape and their form. And so neurologically, I don't think it's any different to seeing a human friend. And you know, if I developed a relationship with a human and I didn't know their name and I just made a name up and I started calling them that name, eventually it'd be like, well, you know, how do you feel about this name that I've been calling you?
Yeah,
and my response from the trees and the birds were that it didn't really connect with their journey, and I think it would have done. You know, maybe not so much the Latin names, but some of the more indigenous names that plants and birds are given reflect a relationship and reflect a story. But because that's not my language, and language changes. I don't know or understand those stories or where those names came from.
I must admit, I'm not a scientist, and I'm curious at the focus on having Latin names for everything.
Hmm.
And what is that about? Why does there have to be a whole separate set of names? I know that the names imply categorization and families and relationships to a degree, but why does it have to be in a language that no one uses? Just I would find, if I was having to study botany or something, I'd find it a nightmare trying to just remember all the names. You know, from a practical point of view, I think that's what would get me the most. But but then you say, why are we doing this? Why are we making it so hard? What's that about?
Yeah.
Is that the
specialist? I mean, I guess there is some structure to those names. And then I guess on a global scale, there's not really any language which everyone speaks.
True.
And I guess the danger of not giving these sort of universal names is because... what I'm sort of describing does actually happen. You know, communities, different parts of the world do build relationships with plants, and sometimes names do come out of those relationships. So you get more sort of local common names, which reflect a local story, you know, and then it becomes confusing because, you know, different parts of the world, it becomes 100 names for the same plant. So I get with referencing, I get there is a place in science, and there's a place in context for giving things names. But from a nature connection point of view, I think instead of asking the book or asking a person what that plant is called, I suggest going asking the plant and getting to know the plant, you know, beyond a name, and you know, really, really closely get to see the shape and its smell and its texture, and it's you know, there's so much more than a lifetime's worth of ways to connect with a plant.
Remember one of my kids when they were really little saying, I can't remember what the context was, but they were like, how could you learn about, I was talking about a bird maybe, how could you learn about something if you couldn't touch it? Or words to that effect.
Yeah.
And having spent 35 years and immersed in the world of reading, that was a bit mind-blowing.
Yeah.
But because it's your kid, you know, you just absorb what they say and you take it seriously. And it was an interesting thing. And then I realized we had books that for the kids when they were little that had material put into the book so you could feel what a bird felt like and what this felt like and what that felt like.
Mm.
And it seemed, in the end, I thought, that's actually really bizarre. Why don't we just go out and see what those things feel like instead of doing it inside of a book?
Yeah.
And it's there's a set of values, I think, that comes with this system of writing everything down. And this is not a conspiracy or anything. It's just a set of values that comes with it that prioritizes intellectual knowledge and written knowledge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's very efficient in that context in ways of sharing knowledge.
Yeah.
But again, connection, you know, I can read a book about someone, people do, you know, there's a fascination with other humans, with celebrities, and people. Some people read about them all the time. Yet, we've got no idea who these people are, you know, until you meet them, you know, kind of with an open heart and be open with each other and actually find out who they are and how they experience life, we're never going to know them.
Yeah.
And that's, I guess, quite a good analogy of book knowledge and experiencing the world.
Something else I realized too, I was reading a conversation online and there were some autistic people taking part in the conversation, and you couldn't tell they were autistic by the writing. And they were talking about their experience of just being completely confused when something would happen between people and they knew something had happened. They didn't know what the heck it was and what information was passed on because they were oblivious to it.
Mm.
But just think about the fact that, like, when we meet people, autistic people in person, we know immediately that they're autistic, but in writing you can't tell, which shows how much information is lost in writing.
Yeah.
We kind of all become autistic.
Yeah.
If the information's only passed through in writing.
Yeah. And this is true of pretty much every living being, I think, on the planet, but so much of our communication isn't even spoken. It's in body language and in different forms, even, you know, sort of energetic communication. You know, sometimes you just feel things from someone.
Your brain's processed a whole bunch of information.
I know that's, I do a lot of practice a lot of bird language, but even with birds, most of their communication isn't actually spoken.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about. Yeah. Mm. What about the plants? Is there a what can you learn from them or listen to from them? What messages do you get? Like you've told me when you walk through the forest that you can hear the birds and you can hear the birds communicating to each other that there's this dangerous thing coming. That's you.
Yeah.
And so you are learning. Once you've got used to them, you've learnt the language of the birds and you've learnt what they've got to tell each other. Is it apply to the plants as well?
Yeah, it does. And so first thing, this is a life's journey, and this is what I will be practicing for my life. You know, this is what this is what I believe is going to bring me a lot of joy and a lot of wellness. There's no end to it. You know, there's no point where it's like, cool, done it. I've done nature connection now. You know, it's just an ongoing thing, and that's why, you know, that journey, and you enter the stage of being an elder, and that's where the value of an elder comes, because they walk that journey for so long and they can give other people, younger people, a sort of head start from what they've experienced, and generation by generation that sort of wisdom keeps developing. So that said, you know, I'm in the midst of my journey with this, and so there's different levels. So there's, you know, I know certain plants, I know their shapes, I know what they like and where they like to grow. So sometimes I'll be walking through the bush, and a certain tree is a certain shape, and I'll stop and I'll need to ask why, and then I'll find that, you know, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, there was a big tree which came down next to it and obviously hit it and changed shape and changed how it grew. Maybe yeah. That tree's since disappeared and returned to the earth. But sort of observations like that, and even seeing what I call sort of ghosts of the forest. So looking at the shape of an existing tree and being able to almost see a ghostly figure of a tree who grew next to it, who yeah. influenced its shape in those trees around it. And from that, even knowing what that tree was from my experience of, you know, every tree has its growth patterns. There's been experiences, especially with trees like mahui, which I've as a reference, which I've spent a lot of time with, because that's one of the sacred fire trees of the forest, and
yeah,
you know, that's what's kept me alive many nights. And there's been times where I've just, it's almost hard to explain, but I've been walking and I needed mahui, and then I've stopped, and I've known, even though I haven't seen one, I've known exactly where one is behind me, like it sort of pulled me in.
Yeah,
and that's happened many, many times. So I've stopped and like, ah, there's a mahui there, and I haven't even seen it. And then I turn around, and there it is, looking at me, glowing. So there's many, many different levels, and I know there's going to continue, you know, to be many, many levels and many, many other threads of connection which I'm going to experience as I take this journey. But yeah, I mean, we all feel. When you stand underneath a beautiful old tree, you know, I think we can all sort of feel that strength and wisdom and stillness.
I think there's something I was kind of in my head that it was, well, just at something, well, something that's made me think of anyway is like we can be sitting in our garden or outside and suddenly, and there's some sparrows or some starlings on the ground, and all of a sudden they take off really fast. And without consciously doing it, we've learnt that the speed that they move away from the spot that they're just pecking at is an indication of how much danger there is.
Mm.
So we know that the cat must have come into the garden, or you know, yep. something like that. Like we know all that. We didn't consciously learn it. We don't even consciously think about it. We've just got to mentally go, oh yeah, cat's around.
Yeah.
And so that's a real basic. I think I'm trying to find an example in my life that is the same principle of what you're doing, but yours is you've put much more effort and gone to places I don't normally go to. So you will have picked up all this stuff, and it's almost subconscious. I guess it's subconscious learning,
yeah.
Or it's undirected learning. It's just what we do. We notice patterns,
yeah.
And if once you see birds take off really fast enough times because a cat's come into the garden, then you just know that pattern.
And that's why we notice patterns.
Yeah,
it's because before, you know, this modern world came about, that's what we did, and so. Yeah, I'm spending a lot of time in natural environments, so for me, my observations and my focus is on the beings of that natural world. But I think within the context of our own lives, I think we are all doing this all the time.
Oh, like yeah, we're all we do.
Just little things we probably don't even realize we're doing, but little nuances and little changes to things that we know, you know, we feel something's different or something's wrong or something's changed, and we're constantly experiencing that. So we're all practicing this.
It's the way we are. And I talk with some of my other regular guests, we talk about how much information the brain draws in, a lot of information, way more than we're conscious of.
Yeah.
And then it filters a whole bunch of it out as well. But like that thing where you wanted to know where the mahoe tree was and you kind of just knew. Like it was, that was just your brain doing it subconsciously. It's not particularly mysterious or woo-woo. It's just, like you say, it's just what we do.
Yeah. But then is that any different to, you know, you're saying about the birds? That was a trigger. So, yeah. You know, like I don't know, but it could quite likely have been a trigger somehow Buddhist tree. So imagine, you know, you saw those birds fly away without actually consciously clocking, oh, that means this. But yet you might have walked along and seen a cat and somehow known, like, huh, how did I know I was going to see that cat? Because that trigger's happened subconsciously, you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe that, and that's probably quite a deep conversation, is where do we draw the line on what is pattern-based observations, pattern-based recognition, which is triggering the things we know, the things we expect to happen, and things we expect to experience, and how much of that is beyond the physical, you know, how much of that is more an energetic level, in a spiritual level, and it's... Yeah, I don't think we need to draw a line because it's a hard one to draw. Well, yeah, but it's quite an interesting concept.
Drawing a line
concept.
Is categorizing and naming. You're getting into that area that, that you don't want to go to. But yeah, it the energetic thing is, I mean, we understand more about energy because the whole quantum physics world is becoming better explained in mainstream, sort of in the mainstream. And we're kind of more accepting of it. But we also know... You know, you meet someone, you say, oh, that person's got a different energy about them.
Mm.
Or they're a high-energy person, which is usually quite visible. So, yeah, and then sometimes you just know, you know, someone across the room's looking at you and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you've picked up something. You don't know what you've picked up because the brain's busily whirring away behind the scenes doing things, picking up information and trying to prompt you with the important stuff. Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't want to get into explaining it because it's almost like you have to justify everything with science.
Mm.
But we all know times when we've just noticed something and we don't know how we noticed it or worked it out.
Yep.
It just the information just arrived.
Yep. And knowing's just enough. That's all we need, really.
Yeah.
I know we haven't got heaps of time, but one thought which just crossed my mind is if I'm saying that we're all doing this in our lives anyway, to a level, then what's the relevance of going into the bush and doing it there? You know, if we can do it in our life, wherever we are.
If I was a good interviewer, I would have asked that question.
I'm always asking myself these questions, which is, you know, I think that's a good thing as well. And, that's a question which I don't necessarily have an easy answer to. And in a way, I think in some levels it doesn't really, you know, matter. I think if we're being aware and we have an intention to use our senses, use of all our senses, and stretch them as far as we can, that creates connection with the world around us, and that's we're going to notice things, we're going to notice smells, and if we're curious, we're going to, you know, explore that and go on a bit of a quest for discovery, and that is a beautiful thing. And I think wherever you do that, whether it's in your office, your home, your back garden, or the bush, I think that's a really wholesome, enriching and nourishing thing for us all to do. Yet I think when we're in a natural environment, I feel the connection to to our Earth Mother, I guess you could say, you know, that deeper connection of understanding how our world really operates and how we fit into that world beyond our buildings, beyond our roads, beyond our cultures, but just true, bare, vulnerable nature. When that's our classroom, I just feel the depths that we can take that journey are near infinite in that environment.
I think that other answer to the question is we've talked about before too, that is just good for people. Like, we know it's good, science has shown that it's good for us to spend time in nature.
Mm.
And so what you're doing with nature connection is enhancing that, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
really, really making the most of your time, because it's hard. It's hard to find that time and make that time to just for wellness and for well-being and for stillness and calmness. So the little time we have to give for that with work and family life, if we can really stretch that to get the maximum benefit of it, then you know that's going to help us, and that's one thing Nature Connection can give you, really stretching those opportunities to be still and quiet and to connect with yourself and connect with the world around you.
And so we started off talking about naming things or not naming things. That's your preference. Is there anything you wanted to add on about that? 'Cause the
conversation... I mean, I guess from a practical perspective, you know, all right, so if we're not going to care about what this plant's called, what am I going to care about? So I guess, you know, if you go and find the nearest plant to you and ways you connect with that, you know, you can just sort of, with a curious mind, look at its shape, look at the way its leaves, the shape of its leaves, always asking why, you know. All of these plants have a common ancestor, and they've taken a journey, and they're all different now, all for a reason. You know, whether it's they were such a nutritious plant that, you know, they had to experience being eaten so much that they've had to create defences, otherwise they'd have become extinct, and whether they've done that with toxicity or with, you know, spines and prickles, or the way they grow, you know, if they've grown to be really low-lying, so some, you know, the mouths of the mammals, it's harder for them to get. Where they like to live, you know, are they on the north side, the south side, the shade, the sun, what do they like? Who are their friends? Some plants aren't very friendly, and around them there'll be a little dead patch because they're so protective, which has been part of their story. Maybe they lived in a really competitive place, and that's how they've, you know, learned to survive that. So they actually emit chemicals into the soil around them, which repels other plants. Some are super friendly, some are really fragile, and if they're not in the perfect place, then they're not going to survive. Some are really resilient. Some grow tall, some grow small. The trees of the forest, there's so much to learn from these plants, and then we can go into smell and, you know, with caution, taste and texture, and always asking why. It's a sacred question, they say, in sort of Native American culture, is what am I experiencing, and then what is this experiencing teaching me?
We don't ask that around these parts very much. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, folks, we've been talking to Robs. Our segment's called Nature Connection, and if you look for Nature Connection, Nature Connection online in Raglan, we might find you.
We've got Nature Connection Aotearoa, which is me and my good friend Nick.
Yep.
We work together more nationally, and then Kuratao is my space, which you will be hearing a lot more about in the next year as we develop it into something which is a little bit more inclusive to people from further afield.
Okay, so that's Kuratao.
That's right.
Yeah, all right. Thanks for coming in, Rob.
Cheers, Aaron.
All right, folks, time to move on. End of the show for the day. I'll be back again tomorrow morning.